This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. And as you look up at the calendar, hey, it's Wednesday. That means Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds will join us here momentarily. And also the newest addition to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast family, Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, as well as Pick 6 Plus. So we'll get some thoughts with them as we'll look into some situational spots. The previous episode, in case you missed it, Chris the Bear Felico, we talked overreaction or market correction and ran through some situational spots. And man, a couple of those spots, Oklahoma Temple being number one. Woo! Saw a big old move on Wednesday as that number came all the way down to 21 at some shops in favor of the Sooners, of course, but still a big move there from a pretty brutal spot regarding Oklahoma on the road against Temple after playing Michigan with College Game Day, and then next week facing their former quarterback in Jackson Arnold. But we'll get into some situational angles with Wes Reynolds, some best bets from him. A lot of similarities on our card regarding me and Wes this week, but we'll dive into that here in just a little bit. I did want to point this out as this news just came across. Alabama getting some good news. Ryan Williams, who did not play against Louisiana Monroe, they really missed him in that one. They only won 73-0 as he did participate in warmups in that game, but ultimately left the Florida State game, remember, with a concussion, didn't play against UL Monroe, is expecting to play that according to Kalen DeBoer on his Wednesday teleconference. And we'll mention this a little bit with Brett Ciancia, but you do wonder, maybe did we sell this Alabama team too quickly? I don't know. Look, you know where I stand on Alabama preseason. I was all in. I laid $1.80 with them to make the playoff. I have the cross sport futures parlay, which got a lovely start to the season with the Bills, who I think are minus 800 to win the AFC East. The problem is I paired them with Alabama to make the playoff, and that has not gone our way so far. Alabama, a 21-point favorite this week against Wisconsin. And then bye week at Georgia, you have Missouri on the schedule, South Carolina, Tennessee, LSU, Oklahoma looks more challenging now. It's a gauntlet of a schedule, and that's why the odds shifted so much after they lost week one to Florida State, because that was a game that they could not lose with the grueling schedule that is ahead. So we'll see how they play this weekend. But good news nonetheless that Ryan Williams, in my opinion, the second best receiver in college football. And I think I said this offseason, maybe 1B to 1A with Jeremiah Smith. I think you got to give a clear one to Jeremiah Smith. But Ryan Williams is awesome, and it's good to see that he is trending towards playing this week against Wisconsin. Just a reminder, the Thursday podcast every week, myself, Matt Humans, we will have that for you. And the goal is to have that in your feed, at least by drive time in the afternoon on the East Coast. So hopefully like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll have that in your inbox. And then also on YouTube as well, youtube.com/VSiN Live. We've been putting up those episodes each and every week. Just a reminder, do hit us with that 5-star rating. It's much, much appreciated, as well as a review. And let's continue to climb up those charts. The numbers have been great. That's a testament to you guys. Hopefully we can continue to have some big weeks. I know it's been some mixed results. My week one, not great. Week two, much better. Even though these late night games have been kicking my ass, I got to figure out how to We were 4-1 going into the late night slate, and Hawaii goes over the total. Sam Houston does not cover. Sam Houston might be terrible. And it was just a bad bet ultimately last late night slate with San Diego State against Washington State. I do have a late night game on the card this week. And I'll just say this, shout out to Larry Beal, the former ESPN broadcaster, as he did a segment on the Bay Area News breaking down the correct pronunciation of JKS, the freshman quarterback there, Jaren Save Sangapulateli. I don't know how I did on that. I think I've done better. But thank you to Larry Beal for putting that out there. And don't worry, Stormy will have that game covered for you late night on ESPN. Speaking of our friends out in the islands, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast is Kahala, the original Aloha shirt brand. Founded in Honolulu in 1936, Kahala has been at the heart of island style for nearly 90 years. Next year marks their 90th anniversary, a celebration of timeless craftsmanship, bold design, and Hawaii's rich cultural story. Most of Kahala's iconic Aloha shirts are still made right there in Hawaii using original prints and time-honored techniques that showcase the beauty of the islands. But Kahala also innovates with modern styles, offering stretchy performance shirts, cooling polos designed for golf, and comfortable shorts built for every adventure. Discover the full collection and heritage at kahala.com. Once again, kahala.com. That's kahala.com. And you can check them out on Instagram at Kahala. Thanks to our good friends over at Kahala for not only giving us some lovely gear when we were out there for the Hawaii-Stanford game, but also being a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Okay, quick break. When we come back, Wes Reynolds, and he'll be followed up by Brett Ciancia. Back-to-back guests here on this Wednesday on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, it is a Wednesday, so we got to have Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds joining us here on the podcast in the thick of golf action. I can't believe it, Wes. There's golf going on. I know next weekend, my boy Steve Sands will be taking it in out at Bethpage as the Ryder Cup will go on. Next week, we might have to have a brief Ryder Cup little tutorial here and get some bets in on the Ryder Cup. But Wes, always appreciate you jumping on, sir. And I'm kicking myself. I knew the bully Cignetti would run it up on Kennesaw State. He was mad after not covering week one, and I didn't lay it with your beloved Hoosiers in week two.
Yeah, they got there. A little bit of a slow start, but I knew that they were going to score points, and because Kennesaw runs that up-tempo, so Indiana was going to get a lot of short drives defensively, and you know, I thought looked pretty good. There's still some concerns with Indiana, of course, a little bit with the secondary and some of the depth on the offensive and defensive lines. But the big game next week is going to be interesting. I know we'll touch on that with one of the games on this week's card. Big primetime showdown on NBC with Illinois and Indiana. So that's being anticipated here, where we're kind of going to see, I think, how good both of these teams are, because we know the pecking order, I think, at the top three in the Big Ten with Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, whatever order you want to put them in. And then kind of below, I think, is still Michigan. And then there's Illinois and Indiana, who I think are right there. Maybe they could work themselves into the top four, but that's certainly going to be a highly anticipated matchup. Rarely, because I've seen a lot of bad games with Illinois and Indiana over the years, where both of those teams are usually not very good. I remember as a student there actually one time where one of the Illinois marching band was walking through the concourse, and one of our drunk Hoosier fans started chanting, 0-9, 0-9. Meanwhile, we were like 2-7. So, you know, we've come a long way from Illinois and Indiana.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one, no doubt. So let's jump right into it. Yesterday on the podcast, I opened up with the situational spots, something that I know you and I love to do. You look ahead, you look back, where are they at from a situational standpoint? It's not always 100%. We wish it was, because then we wouldn't be doing podcasts. We'd be sipping Mai Tais in Hawaii. But instead, you look at these spots, and let's jump into one that I know you and I are curious about. We've got Western Michigan going to Illinois, and this is what I would deem a sandwich spot. You've got Illinois coming off of an impressive win against Duke, albeit very frustrating if you had Duke plus the points, but we move on from that L. And then, as you mentioned, you've got a primetime showdown against Indiana, NBC, Noah Eagle, and Todd Blackledge will be making their way to Bloomington next weekend. So Western Michigan comes to town. They're coming off of a loss. They squandered a lead against North Texas a week ago. Is this a spot to maybe look to fade Illinois in what could be a little sleepy for the Illini with a big game waiting on deck?
I think it is, Tim, and I took some 28 and 28 and a half. I think there's still a couple rogue 28s, but 27 and a half. And I would still probably take that for a little bit smaller. I thought, you know, Western Michigan did show a little bit of life last week against North Texas. They did blow it late and eventually lose 33-30 in overtime. Working two different quarterbacks, they really ran the ball a lot. 57 times Western Michigan ran the ball for 216. They used the two quarterbacks, Brock Lowry, by the way, a former Indiana transfer, and also Brady Jones. So, you know, Western Michigan, I think we could see that they want to run the ball. It's not going to be as easy, of course, on a Big Ten defense like Illinois. But I just think Illinois, now they're getting the respect because there was a split last week where Illinois was kind of the quote-unquote public play and Duke was the sharp play. Well, sometimes the public beats the quasi-sharps, and they certainly did last week. Illinois really pulled away 45-19. It seemed like that game was closer than the final score because you look at the yardage, 438-419, but five turnovers for Duke. And you're not going to beat anybody when you have five turnovers. And that score got very lopsided late there in the second half. So I think, you know, a little bit of a misleading final, even though I think Illinois was the better team.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say this. Illinois was the better team. They were the right side. But 45-19 is misleading. There were a lot of opportunities where they shot themselves in the foot. That is Duke. And, you know, it was one of those games we talked about on the podcast, the old proverbial pros versus Joes. Chuck Esposito from Stations Casino here in town came on the tailgate show, as he does every Saturday at 11:30 Eastern. He said it was the second most lopsided ticket count they had at that time, that morning, on Illinois. But then you look at the Circa Friday Football Invitational.
Right.
Six selections on Duke, zero on Illinois. I was on Duke as well. Humans was on Duke. And look, it is what it is. It was a frustrating game, but I think I'm with you. I think this is a very unique situational spot. I just want to point this out real quickly because we talk about these situational spots a lot, and I've been doing it for, you know, a couple of years on VSiN, sandwich spots, letdown spots, whatever. It's a challenge nowadays because the market is moving like crazy. And as you pointed out, it's not a massive move. 28, yeah, it's a key number. But I took 28 and a half. It's now 27 and a half. And I want to get to this next game because we're recording this on Wednesday morning. All week long, it was, you know, around 24. I got 25 at one shop early on in the week. And now it's 21, 21 and a half. Oklahoma at Temple. What a spot for Temple. Now, can you trust in the Owls at home there at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia as you get your Wawa hoagies walking into the stadium there? But this is a brutal spot for Oklahoma. College game day with Michigan. And then next week, Wes, Jackson Arnold, their former quarterback, comes to town. And now you got to travel, what, 2,500 miles to play in front of, you know, a bunch of empty seats in an NFL stadium?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is a very difficult spot. And I got 24 and a half as well. It is now 21 and a half. And Temple, we'll start with Temple first, because this is an obvious rebuild. Now, I think that they made a very good hire, even though he is 66 years old. But Casey Keeler is from the area. I don't want to mispronounce the town. Emmaus, Pennsylvania.
Emmaus.
Yes. Thank you.
Shout out to the Hornets.
You're more from that area, so you got that right.
Well, sorry, I went to college up there, the Emmaus Hornets. If I remember correctly, very strong field hockey program.
Yes.
Shout out to Emmaus.
Yes, and he played at Delaware. His coaching career predominantly was in the Northeast. Now, he comes from Sam Houston State, where he did very well and turned them into really an FCS powerhouse. Won the national championship at Delaware in 2003, won at Sam Houston in 2020. He brings in the offensive coordinator from Montana State, Tyler Walker, and they were really explosive, really fast-paced offense, by the way, there for the Bobcats in Bozeman. And he was a good hire for this program. Now, they're still down on talent. Don't get me wrong there at Temple, but Matt Rhule proved that you could win there in Philadelphia, you know, at a city school. And I think that this guy can do the same. I think that they're going to hang around here against Oklahoma, who did get the big win over Michigan. Mark, it was kind of two-way action, I think, really, on that game. There were some people that liked the dog and people that weren't convinced with Oklahoma, and then Oklahoma got a move early in the week. So I look at this, and Oklahoma is now running that tempo, too, with John Mateer, who is – his Heisman odds are shortening by the day. Ben Arbuckle comes with him from Washington State as the offensive coordinator. So they're trying to run a little bit of that tempo. But Oklahoma, I do think that this is a tricky situation for them. Going to play in Philadelphia, that crowd is obviously not going to be sold out at the Link. And then Jackson Arnold and Auburn coming in where, you know, you want to get at your old quarterback. So SEC opener as well, by the way, for Oklahoma. So there's a big priority there. And also the fact they escaped with the win there, by the way, at Auburn last year. Auburn really blew that game, but I think Temple is still the right side here. I just, you know, going there, this is not a game that you usually see a Power Four team play on the road. And now you're getting it here with the Sooners. So early kick too. Yeah, I understand sleepy. Why the mark. Yes.
Sleepy.
Yes.
Very sleepy spot. By the way, five Power Four teams on the road at Group of Five teams this week. So could be interesting. Very unique spots. Let's hit another one. Iowa State at Arkansas State. Arkansas State, boy, I think they just allowed Arkansas to score another touchdown. It was 600 plus yards for Taylen Green and company. But Iowa State heading to Arkansas State, we talked about this one yesterday as well. This one might be a little bit more challenging to get behind, but the situational spot for Iowa State is brutal, right? You've played three games in a row. You went to Ireland. You're coming off of the Cy-Hawk win. You've got a bye next week, so you might be looking ahead a little bit. Let's just get out of here. And now you got to go to Jonesboro and take on the Red Wolves. I believe I called them the Red Devils yesterday. Arkansas State catching 21. Can they keep this thing competitive?
I think that they can. They do have a veteran quarterback, Jalen Rayner, by the way, third-year starter down there in Jonesboro for the Red Wolves. And you said it, Tim, with Iowa State. They finally got over the hump, you know, and beat, you know, Kirk Ferentz and Iowa had owned them in Ames, really, in this series. And they finally got over the hump, and they hung on. Iowa had a chance at the end. Couldn't get the offense going. Iowa State got the stop and then ran out the clock. And I think that this is a big number here. I know Arkansas State gave up, you know, however many yards and 8 million touchdowns to Arkansas last week. But this Iowa State team, they really haven't shown a lot yet offensively. And they're certainly not holding back at all. They have been in some grinders. They've been in a couple grinders already against Kansas State and, of course, in the Cy-Hawk game last week against Iowa. Now, against South Dakota, who's a pretty good FCS team, they did whatever they wanted. They had 529 yards and won 55-7. So they're going to score a lot more than they've been scoring. But, yeah, I thought 21 was a little rich. By the way, the one rogue 20.5 right now is at Circa.
Which is always a good sign.
Yeah, so somebody kind of likes the Red Wolves here. I think Arkansas State does hang in, and this kind of might be a get-through-it game with Iowa State because you said they have that bye, and then they got the Big 12 opener. By the way, they've already got a leg up in the Big 12 because they won a conference game over in Ireland against K-State. So that's going to be important. So, yeah, this is a really weird spot, I think, for the Cyclones to go play a Sun Belt team on the road. And I think the Sun Belt team is going to be excited. You know, when you get a big school like that, because you used to play in all the other directional schools in your conference, and you get a Power Four school like Iowa State, like, that's kind of a big deal. We saw that with Tulane against Northwestern a couple weeks ago, get a Big Ten school in and beat the hell out of them. I obviously don't expect the same result here, but I think Arkansas State hangs.
Yeah, I think it'll be could be a hold your nose spot. Bunch of hold your nose spots. It's kind of an ugly week, but I want to get to one of the marquee matchups of the week, and we would not have predicted this in the summer months, but here we are. South Florida beats Boise State and then shocks the world and beats Sunbelt Billy 18-16, and now South Florida is 18th in the polls. Probably should be higher, to be honest, but we've learned some things about pollsters this week, so they're at 18. Miami, on the flip side, laying 17.5. You know, this was one of the first bets I made of the week. And we talked about overreaction versus market correction with the bear yesterday on the pod. This thing was 18.5 last week at DraftKings, went down to 16, maybe even lower than that. I laid 16 and now it's back up at 17.5. Maybe you get to 17. You could also look first half, 9.5s are out there. Maybe that's the way you go with Miami playing Florida on deck, avoids the backdoor nature. I really like Miami here. I think those lines are just going to be a little bit too tough for South Florida. And I feel like, Wes, maybe there's a gas tank on empty a little bit here for the Bulls.
Yeah, I laid 17. I did not get the opener, which I did. But we did see some buyback, by the way, with South Florida yesterday. Got to 18.5. So we did see a little bit of a move there. Very sloppy game with the Gators last week, even though I felt South Florida was probably ended up the better team in the second half. The Gators, I think, had like 3 touchdowns called back because of penalties and had to settle for field goals like all the time, had 2 on 1 drive, if memory serves me correctly. But I think the U is for real. And I say that with a little bit of trepidation in my voice, because can the coach stay out of the way? Can Mario Cristobal stay out of the way? And that's always the danger with Miami, because you know the man can recruit, one of the best recruiters in the country. But man, some questionable in-game decisions. However, I look at his staff. This is probably the best staff Mario Cristobal has had. Shannon Dawson as offensive coordinator. Corey Heatherman, who was at Minnesota, and the Gophers have had one of the better defenses in the Big Ten for the last several years. He comes in. Now he has U talent versus Minnesota talent. Minnesota talent is good. Talent you get at the U is more than good. And I think you're going to see that bear fruit here against USF. I just wonder, the motivation and the want to and the try hard is going to be there. But I just wonder if they're going to be able to keep up with these guys. I was very impressed with Carson Beck, especially in the first game against Notre Dame. And he's been a little bit maligned, but now it's like, hey, man, this guy might be a Heisman candidate. So South Florida kind of seems like America's hottest underdog right now, because they've won 2 straight. They beat Boise. They beat, of course, the Gators last week in Gainesville. So big doings on the CW on Saturday. A really huge game down there in Coral Gables. And I like the U here.
I don't want to wait until this game gets started, right?
No? A little bit of Dawson's Creek,
was
man.
Dawson's Creek on the CW. I can make those jokes with you. I don't know. Was that UPN or something?
It was originally the WB, Dawson's Creek, and One Tree Hill, of course.
Ah, yes.
But CW, it comes from the roots of the WB, so it was pretty much on that network. But yeah, big Saturday afternoon down there in Coral Gables. I think Miami gets away in the second half here.
Yeah, so I think probably for the pod. I mean, once again, that and we're not making excuses. The market moves and we try to do the best we can and get on top of numbers and give you the best number possible. This was a game that I targeted very quickly and talked about, but we'll talk more about it on Thursday. Let's stay with the Florida theme. Florida, of course, losing to South Florida, and now they go on the road to LSU. LSU, very sleepy spot last week. I think you and I both pinpointed that as a sandwich spot there for LSU, coming off the Clemson win with Florida on deck, 23-7 win, very ho-hum. You'll forget about that, especially if they take care of business this weekend. Number at 7.5 now was as high as 9.5. I was curious if it would ever get to 10. It did not. It's now down at 7.5. I took some 9, obviously not a key number. So 7.5, I think still playable. Is this a buy low spot, or is there serious issues with this Florida team? Curious your thoughts. Nighttime in Death Valley.
Boy, they all want to get rid of Sunbelt Billy again. Oh, yeah. All of a sudden down there in Gainesville, and it was a poor performance. And you just saw that they made a lot of mistakes, a lot of dumb penalties that took off the touchdowns that I mentioned, where even though South Florida outstatted them, you could have easily seen the Gators win that game. LSU, sloppy last week like we thought that they were going to be. They never threatened the number against Louisiana Tech, and Louisiana Tech really didn't do much offensively. They had 154 yards in that game. Sonny Cumbie's guys I think probably lucky to stay within the number. And I think they stay within the number, not because they played well, but because LSU is very flat. I still think it's a little bit worth it at 7.5. It is. That's college football, Tim. And that's kind of the name of the game, is when you have a team that's unwanted, like Florida, and yet you see it getting bet.
Yep.
That's telling you something, I think, sometimes. Does it always work out that way? No. But more often than not, you see that in college football. You never have the same team 2 weeks in a row. And I think you're going to see a fired up Gators. By the way, this is getting bet to the under, too, because LSU's defense certainly is improved. I think through two games, we can recognize that. Because this would have been a shootout. This would have been like 45-42 in the last couple of years. We are not going to approach that in this game, as you're seeing the under now down as low as 48 in the market. I think the Gators hang around here. I'm willing to go ahead and buy them and say that maybe the issues get quickly rectified against an LSU team that now is dealing with some expectations and dealing with spotlight that they maybe did not have immediately starting the season.
All right, let's go to the noon window, noon Eastern. Let's go back to the Windy City, Oregon and Northwestern. Unfortunate news for the Purple Cats. Cam Porter, their running back, lost for the year. So that's a significant loss for Coach Braun's squad there. Big noon kickoff will be there. It'll be a beautiful background. We'll see if it's a beautiful game. I had some Oregon first half last week, and that was a wish they were all that easy, as the bear was poked and he wanted to wanted blood against Gundy. What do you make of this spot here, Northwestern? You can get some 28s if you do like the dog in the Purple Cats.
Yeah, this is a hold your nose on the Purple Cats, because this certainly could get ugly. And that offense was not impressed against Tulane, as Preston Stone, the SMU transfer, did throw four picks. And they got a little bit right against Western Illinois in a Friday game that nobody was really paying attention to. But a win is a win, and you've got to take them where you can get them. I think that this is tough for Oregon, because not only they were motivated with the bulletin board material that they got from Gundy and won 69-3. You know, like, I can't believe it was that. I'm mad at myself that I didn't end up betting that, because I was like, I think Oregon's right, but man, that number's high. And boy, it wasn't high enough. So that's one that I left off that I absolutely regret. But now you go to Northwestern. It's a 9 a.m. kickoff on the West Coast, 11 there in Evanston. And now you're playing the Purple Cats. I know it's the Big Ten opener, so I'm not going to say Oregon's not going to be focused, but look at what they have coming up. Next week, you do have the game formerly known as the Civil War against the Beavers. Yep. And I know that they're not in the same conference anymore, but I still think that these rivalry games, despite the fact that these networks want to break up all these conferences and ruin it, I think these rivalry games still matter. And I think it especially matters to Oregon State, and I still think it'll matter to Oregon, too. And then after that, the big one at Penn State. So Oregon's got some big fish to fry coming up, and we're going to see how really, really good they are. They've had some easy wins at home the first 2 weeks. But Northwestern, I think that they can maybe, you know, possess the ball enough to where they can muck the game up. And we've seen the total, by the way, go down to as low as 48.5. So that's always a little bit of a feather in the cap with the dog, where it's like, okay, we got to limit possessions here, and we can't go up and down the field with these guys or we're going to get beat. So what inevitably you're doing with Northwestern, like you've been doing in recent years, if you've been taking them as big underdogs, just don't turn it over. If you get stopped, it's one thing. Just don't turn it over in your own territory. Don't give up pick sixes. Don't give up fumble, sack fumble returns. And I think that they should stay within the number.
All right, let's get to two more games to wrap up here Wednesdays with Wes. And let's go a little bit deeper. Jacksonville State last week pulled off a bit of a shocker. They beat Liberty in a massive game in that terrible conference, the CUSA, as they were about 6.5-point dogs, and they won that game pretty comfortably against Liberty. And then they played Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern had their, to think about baseball, had their West Coast swing. Fresno State and USC, they stayed out west for both of those games. So Clay Helton's squad is a 3.5-point favorite here. And I think I'm curious your angle on this one, as 3.5, 4 looks like the number for Georgia State at home against Jack State.
And I know that this is not a conference game for Georgia Southern, but it does feel like you're up against it a little bit here. You're 0-2, lost on the road, even though they were favored at some point against Fresno State. I know they got blown out last week. I thought that they were at least a little bit better. It's hard to say that when you give up 755 total yards to USC, as USC, I think, has been out to prove a point. I've been on them both weeks, by the way, laying big numbers. And Jacksonville State off the upset over Liberty, and it wasn't a fluke win. They were the better team in that game. So it feels like Georgia Southern's up against it, and this is that drop in class, to use like a horse racing analogy, because now you're playing a team kind of on your level. You know, that's a Conference USA team. I think the Sun Belt is a better conference. Georgia Southern was projected in the preseason to be right up there with James Madison as the best team in the East Division. And they've got a veteran quarterback. They're a veteran team. They got licked by two better teams. This is the buy low spot on what looks like a weak favorite when you look at it from a market standpoint. But and you haven't seen a lot of movement. There's a couple fours, but it's basically 3.5 where it opened. This might be a money line, or I may just lay it. Sometimes with these smallish favorites, I'd be willing to lay money line. I think Georgia Southern gets in the win column this week.
All right, we'll wrap on this. A team near and dear to my heart. A lot of expectations preseason on the old midshipmen of Navy. Last week was kind of a weird. They had lightning delays and all of that against UAB. They're able to, you know, win that game. They don't cover against the Fighting Dilfers. And they, looking at the schedule, have a bye week and then a revenge spot against Rice after the bye week. On the road to the Golden Hurricane, Tulsa catching two touchdowns against the Mids.
Yeah, this is something I like to do in college football. When a team gets bet in a major way in the market, and keep in mind that was a pretty nondescript game, so it's Tulsa, New Mexico State, so you're not exactly getting Joe Better betting that game. So yeah. That was some sharp guys that were on Tulsa, and they lose outright as favorites, even though New Mexico State got late buyback, maybe some guys trying to work middles, and they didn't beat the Aggies there in Las Cruces. So now you're getting a Navy team who's been absolutely explosive the first 2 weeks. I did not play the side. I played the over last week against UAB, and that got there easily, even though there were about 10 million rain delays. And I was like, are they going to call this game and then I'm going to get screwed on something that's a dead winner? You know, you take all the winners you can get, I think in these cards some weeks. But I took some 14.5, and I'd still take a little 14 here to take kind of a team that everybody now doesn't want anything to do with. It's like once they burn us in the market, which Tulsa did last week, then they don't want them. And that's when I like to come in and kind of scoop up the scraps here. So Navy laying 14 on the road. Navy secondary, and you saw it against UAB, that's a brand new secondary for that defense, can be a little bit leaky. So it's a little bit hard to lay big points, especially on the road with this team, even though I am high on the midshipmen this year.
He is Wes Reynolds at WesReynolds1 on social media. And tell the folks about some golf. You got some golf content coming out this week?
We do. Obviously, the Ryder Cup tune-up. Ryder Cup, you mentioned, in a couple weeks. And almost all of Team USA is playing at the Pro Corps Championship in Napa Valley. I wish I was in Napa Valley this weekend. That seems nice. Like a good plan. I got some time off. Maybe I'll do that. But and anyway, also you have the BMW Championship over there in Wentworth, England. That is a flagship event on the DP World Tour. So almost all of Team Europe, including Rory McIlroy, who great moment at the Irish Open last week to win his home open, where he had to make a long eagle just to get into the playoff, which he eventually won, and the place went ape, you know what, at the K Club in Ireland. So got those two tournaments up. And then, of course, we got NFL, we've got college football, we got baseball, we got WNBA about to start the playoffs. So busy time of year, but we wouldn't have it any other way.
Wes, you're the best. We'll talk to you next week and preview Indiana in prime time against Illinois. Looking forward to it, man.
On NBC.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, and before we welcome in our next guest, Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews on Twitter. Also, check out Pick Six Plus. Just a reminder, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast being brought to you by our friends at Rainbow Authentics, the official source for game-used apparel, autographs, trading cards from your favorite Hawaii student athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond Memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear, Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your best at every game. Find all your unique items and support Hawaii Athletics, rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends at Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Without further ado, he'll be joining us every Wednesday. It is Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, and Pick Six Plus, which you can get your hands on every single week. Updated numbers on all of the Power Four teams, all 68 of those teams. Brett, how are you, sir? And once again, remind the folks how they can get their fingers on Pick Six Plus.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for having me back. What a week it was. I mean, of course, week one had all the headliner matchups, and week two on paper didn't look that impressive, but those are the weeks in college football that tend to shock you, and we got to get into what happened down in the swamp. But yeah, thanks for mentioning. It's picksixpreviews.com/plus. It's all the info and data and stats that you like from my preview magazine, but now updated weekly. It's emailed out every Tuesday, but we got everything in there. My game grader formula, all the advanced stats, the opponent adjusted stats, situational trends, you know, how's a team off a win or off a bye week or as the home favorite, all those splits you want to see. It's all in there. Picksixpreviews.com.
All right, we'll check that out. And I've got it loaded up right now. I'm looking at it. And I want to get into a couple things from last week and spinning it forward. And you mentioned you have your game grader out, and your number one team from week two was Oregon, who just absolutely lambasted Oklahoma State. But number two is Vanderbilt. And, you know, we talked about this game, and this is a unique spot this week for the Commodores as they take on South Carolina, a team that had a lot of preseason hype. You've seen some Vanderbilt love coming to the betting market. Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt have been great in that dog role. But as your game grader formula played out, you had Vanderbilt as the second best team last week against Virginia Tech.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, it was a strong second half. Virginia Tech held a lead. It was 20-17, and Virginia Tech had the ball. They were on the plus 34 as well, fourth and inches. You've got a 6'4" quarterback, Kyron Drones, big offensive line. And instead, Brent Pry decides to punt it, really a surrender punt almost. So from there, Vandy took advantage. They rattled off 27 unanswered points, ran up the score, ran up the yardage stats. I mean, it was a really impressive performance. And you can't help but look that Virginia Tech is the common thread between Vandy and South Carolina. Of course, both teams played Virginia Tech, and now they're facing off head-to-head. With South Carolina at a neutral site, they kind of struggled with Virginia Tech. They needed a punt return touchdown to pull away. The final was 24-11. And then what Vanderbilt did in Lane Stadium really stood out to me as the more impressive performance. So, yeah, I tend to agree with the movement so far. I've got South Carolina only favored by two. I think this thing opened up, 6 points, five and a half. So I'm tending to say there's some value, about a field goal value with Vanderbilt here.
Yeah, the look ahead line, and that's something we're going to do, was sitting at South Carolina 8.5, reopened 5.5, and you've seen steady movement here with the Commodores. And once again, they've loved that underdog role as 1-0 ATS as an underdog this year and 8-2 as an underdog a year ago. Well, let's stay in the SEC because, boy, it was quite the clunker for Florida. Sunbelt Billy, we just talked about this game this week against LSU with Wes Reynolds. What did your game grader formula come out for Florida, and how much adjustment did you make on the Gators after that just stunning and unacceptable loss to South Florida?
Yeah, those are great ways to describe it. It was stunning. It wasn't even really on my radar, to be honest with you. I mean, they were 17.5-point favorites. When you talk about Florida, you think about their tough SEC gauntlet. I think we all overlooked it. They had USF on the September slate, you know, because looking ahead, it is a brutal SEC schedule for them. They've got to get a lot fixed. But some things stood out to me. First off, the offensive line coming in, I had them highly rated in my preview magazine. They were able to get two guys to come back from the NFL draft. I thought they'd be able to get a solid run push all season. That didn't happen against USF at all. Continues to be a potential weakness for them. But yeah, just some coaching mess ups there. The clock management at the end of the game. Stuff like missed tackles on defense, the snap over the head of the punter, just stuff like this is inexcusable. And then, of course, the character issues there, spitting on the final drive, just a total meltdown for Florida. So, yeah, we'll see if they get it fixed overnight here before this trip to Baton Rouge. But you can't help but downgrade Florida after that performance, especially with what's coming up ahead. So, yeah, they're out of the top 10 for me. They're down to number 20 in game grader. But that could even continue to fall here as we start SEC play.
You know, a team that last year, it was a nightmare of a season for Jeff Lebby and Mississippi State, a game that we talked about on the Thursday pod. Both Matt and I had Mississippi State in that spot. Got off to an amazing start. Second half really dominated by Arizona State, but they get the big stand when they need it. And then the late touchdown as a mess up in coverage allowed that to unfold there. You know, twofold here with both of these teams. What did you do with Mississippi State from a, you know, a game grading standpoint? How much has this team improved, maybe from your expectation? And then on the flip side, Arizona State, a team that came out of nowhere a year ago to get the Big 12 crown. And now you look at a couple teams in the Big 12 that have impressed early on. So what have you done with Mississippi State and Arizona State after that 24-20 game in Stark Vegas last week?
Yeah, well, signature victory for Jeff Lebby here in his second season. Really huge play there, obviously, with Blake Shapen hitting Brennan Thompson there, 50-yard walk-off touchdown. But really what stood out to me was their defense in the first half, holding Arizona State out of the end zone several times. I think they held them to just 3 points in that whole first half. And this was supposed to be the dynamic duo of Sam Leavitt and Jordan Tyson, who were drawing high NFL grades. And I mean, there was drops. It was just a mess. So Leavitt has not looked comfortable in this game. And also the opener against Northern Arizona, he didn't look comfortable there either. A lot of scrambling, a lot of tucking and run after the first read wasn't there. So I have my concerns with Arizona State. And in such a tight league race, even a few points down on the power ratings flips a lot of these projected game results. So they came in really high for me in the Big 12. And now they're looking like, fourth, fifth, sixth place right now. So, and again, it's pretty fickle. That could change here in such a tight league. But TCU and Utah and Texas Tech, they have far surpassed my projection, surpassed Arizona State. And with Mississippi State, yeah, it's such a tough conference that it's hard to climb up the ladder so quick. But they're ahead of schedule from what I expected in the preseason, for sure.
You gave Coleman Hutzler, one of your defensive coordinators of the week. You gave your other to Todd Orlando of USF, who you might remember that name from some bigger stops previously for Todd Orlando. On the flip side, offensively, you gave it to Jake Spavadol. And look, give him some credit. Give Sawyer Robertson some credit. That defense is very leaky there for Baylor. But man, what a game it was. What a comeback coming from two touchdowns down in the fourth quarter. There were some missed field goals by SMU. Big win for Baylor. I don't know if it's devastating, but that's a rough loss to swallow for SMU. And I know coming into the year, you were bullish on some regression for the Ponies. So that was probably a pretty good result for you with Baylor coming back to beat SMU.
Yeah, well, hopefully everyone was able to find the CW channel. And and if you found it, keep it on for this week because they're also broadcasting the Miami-USF game. So a little CW action. But this was arguably the best game of the week for me. I loved watching this one. A lot of great offense, explosive plays. The big comeback there by Baylor with 5 minutes left, down 14. And you're right. It was actually big for Pick 6 Plus readers because in the preseason, my win totals, I had Baylor going over. I had SMU going under. And this being a double whammy effect. So that was a huge, huge turnout. Look at Baylor, in a wide open Big 12. They have the offense, but can Dave Aranda get something together with his defense? Of course, that's his track record, that's his area of expertise. And we just haven't seen him come to fruition at Baylor. So they got to fix that defense. But Sawyer Robertson, he joined some elite company here, going three consecutive 400-yard games. That joins Patrick Mahomes and Brandon Whedon within the Big 12 the last 15 years. So nice little nugget there. But, if you watch that game, you can tell this is a dynamic offense.
You know, sticking in the Big 12, how much have you upgraded Utah? Weird spot this week for the Utes. They got to go on the road to Laredice to take on Wyoming. A little bit of a look ahead maybe to Texas Tech with that big noon kickoff coming. So you do wonder if maybe they're caught looking ahead a bit. But Utah, much to my delight, has gotten off to a great start here with Devin Dampier in that offense. And then TCU, Very impressive what we saw from Sonny Dykes' squad in that season opener against North Carolina. So when you look at the Big 12, as we all know, a very wide open conference, how much changes in your numbers have you seen just from the first couple of games?
Yeah, these are two of my fastest risers. And in the preview magazine at the start of the year, I had Utah 22nd nationally. I had TCU 25th. So both in my preseason top 25. And then even from there, they both had huge week one. So Utah destroying UCLA in the Rose Bowl. That was one of the top grades of week one. And same with TCU going into Chapel Hill and destroying Bill Belichick's debut. That boosted them up. So in such a tight league, these two week one performances vaulted them to the top of the Big 12 standings for me in terms of power ratings. So when you're looking ahead, you know, I project out every future line for every team. And as it sits right now, I have Utah favored the rest of the way. And I know that, you know, there's going to be some tight margins there. I think on the road at Baylor, I've got them by a point. At hosting Texas Tech by a couple points. So it's tight margin, but in terms of who's projected as a favorite, yeah, Utah is in the driver's seat right now. It's always tough to go up at Wyoming. I remember Missouri had trouble up there a couple seasons back, and you got the altitude, you got a little look-ahead effect that you mentioned with Texas Tech. I'm glad that game is getting attention, the Utah-Texas Tech game. Got big noon treatment coming up next week, and that could go a really long way in determining who goes to Dallas. So yeah, you're right. Utah, big riser, and TCU, they're being really slept on nationally, but their offense is dynamic, and they can make a nice, solid run themselves. They got SMU coming up, too, speaking of SMU. So another big one in a couple weeks.
Yeah, Wyoming, the Pokes, opened up the season on CBS a couple years ago. They beat Texas Tech in a crazy game. Wyoming came all the way back to win that game in, I think, double overtime against Texas Tech. Before we look ahead to this week, I do want to hit on a couple of teams and start with USC. They're 2-0 ATS. You know, Wes Reynolds just mentioned them in the previous segment. And they go on the road to Purdue. But you know, this is a team that I know a couple people that I respect really anticipated a jump up here in USC in their production and what to expect from the Trojans. Two very easy wins to start the year, so it's hard to take too much from it, but 73 spot on Missouri State, 59 on their former coach Clay Helton. What have you done with USC? Is this one of the more rising teams in your numbers?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up USC. Like you said, I was high on them in the preseason too. I had them 15th nationally coming in. They were in my best bets win totals article there, going over 7.5. And so far, so good. I mean, they've taken care of business and then some, really scoring at will. That's what you want to see out of a Lincoln Riley offense. Again, we're going to learn a lot more coming up with Big Ten play, but really handled Missouri State, a new FBS team, and then destroyed Georgia Southern last week in Clay Helton's return to the USC LA Coliseum. That was pretty funny to see. But no, I like USC a lot. Like I said, started at 15th, and now I've got them all the way up into my top 10. And when you look at their schedule projecting forward, you know, the Notre Dame game is on there. But I'm looking at maybe a 10-2 spot for USC now is feasible. And if you're going 10-2 in this Big Ten, you're looking at maybe an at-large playoff bid. So I'm surprised that the AP poll doesn't have them ranked. But then again, what's come out this week from the AP, I guess I'm not surprised. So, you know, that's a different discussion. But yeah, USC, a quick riser. And I think they're going to go in there and really dominate Purdue. And I still have them projected to beat Illinois. That's a controversial game with the Illinois preseason hype. But I still like USC. I think the wrong team is ranked, you know, between USC and Illinois there.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one next week. We just talked about Indiana-Illinois primetime on NBC. And then following up, as you alluded to, Champaign will be hosting the Trojans of USC. So it's going to be fun to see this USC team, what they're made of, as they do have Michigan at home. They do have Oregon later on in the season, as you mentioned, Notre Dame in the middle there of October. Look, there was no more disappointing result in week one for me than what happened to Alabama. I don't want to say stood on an island. There were plenty of people who were on, you know, the Crimson Tide Island, but I was waving my arm saying, hey, this is a playoff team. And I bet them to make the playoff. They have since played just one game and they went out and beat, you know, UL Monroe 1-0. But as you look at your numbers, the schedule's pretty challenging, as we all know. You can't really afford to lose that game to Florida State. But did we maybe sell our stock on Alabama? And I mean the collective we. I still have my tickets. I can't, unfortunately, get off of them. But did we give up on Alabama too soon in your eyes?
Well, look, I was right there with you in the preseason. I remember being on your show talking about Alabama. They had all the things that I would look for in my preview magazine. Number one, an NFL mock draft watch list coming up for 2026. A lot of guys that could have gone pro came back. Second year coach bonus. Hire of Ryan Grubb, his longtime offensive coordinator. Star power at receiver. It had it all. It checked all the boxes on paper. Then you got to go out and play. And, you know, you can do all the research you want. It's sometimes hard to tell what's going on in a locker room or to gauge effort levels, these kind of things. And against Florida State, you didn't see any of that. Their pursuit angles were terrible. They weren't trying, it seems like, at times. The physicality has been gone. So yeah, maybe it's a double overreaction. We're going to overreact to the opener and then maybe overreact again. I think Alabama is still a solid team. I mean, the talent's undeniable. It's a matter of, you know, getting them focused and bought in. But last week, yeah, they did what they were supposed to and then some. Ty Simpson went a perfect 17 for 17. You rarely see 100% completion. I don't care who you're playing. But then also what I liked and what caught my eye was that the backups really played well. Austin Mack and Keelon Russell both threw a pair of touchdowns. So I wonder that, you know, if Simpson ends up not working out for them, if they're going to experiment with some of these other five stars they have in the room. So, we're going to learn more with Wisconsin coming up, a team that I think Alabama should be favored by multiple touchdowns over. Wisconsin is going through a quarterback injury themselves with Billy Edwards. So, I like Alabama to win big here. And yeah, hold on to those tickets, Tim. I don't think it's time to throw them in the fire quite yet. It's a long season. They have the talent to get it fixed.
Well, I have a cross sport futures parlay: the Bills to win the division and Alabama to make the playoff. And the Bills' magical comeback certainly helps out that one side. But I need Alabama to help me out on the other side of things. I also want to hit on Oregon. I'll say this: a lot of people that I respect liked Oregon either under their win total, not necessarily to miss the playoff, but they thought there may be some regression. And look, last week was something. And Dan Lanning, as we've seen now with the Colorado game a couple years ago and this past weekend against Oklahoma State, when he has a chance to be the bully, he's going to be the bully. And I mentioned that your number one graded game of the week was Oregon 69-63 win over Oklahoma State. Not sure your thoughts on, you know, Big Noon this weekend as they go to Chicago to take on Northwestern, but where are you on this Oregon team? Because there were a lot of mixed feelings on what this Oregon team could be. Obviously, the game that we're looking forward to is a couple weeks away in your backyard in the state of Pennsylvania when they had to take on Penn State. But what have you done with Oregon so far? Is this a team that maybe we overlooked a little bit in the preseason?
Yeah, well, in the preseason, in my research, you go position by position. It was undeniable what they were stockpiling talent-wise. When you do it per player, they were number one in the high school ranks recruiting and number one from the transfer portal, too, if you go per player. So just a whole new caliber of athlete going up to Oregon. But my catch was this. It was a lot of redshirt freshmen, true sophomores, true freshmen, a lot of youth. A lot of starters gone from the year prior. So what I put in the magazine there, I said, Oregon's my national champion pick for 2026. I think they were a year off. Now, maybe I was a year off in that forecast because they're looking like a legit national title contender. Maybe all that youth is already playing up the standard and then some. It looked like they were playing on air Saturday against Oklahoma State. It was like a 7-on-7 combine out there. It was unbelievable. And then the consecutive pick six were just the chef's kiss on top at the end there in the third quarter. But again, this wasn't Grambling or something. This was a Big 12 team. It's Oklahoma State, one of the proud programs of the Big 12. So I thought that was quite a statement game. And I think that they deserve, national title consideration now. Will Stein got my coordinator of the week. It was the number one game grade. I think they're going to blow out Northwestern there on the lakefront. But you're right. All eyes are on to that whiteout game. It's going to be the whiteout this year at Penn State, end of September. So that's turning into being one of the games of the year coming up.
All right, let's get to a couple games this week. Some of the games of the week, as you point out there, your four matchups of the week. Not a big surprise in no particular order. Tennessee, Georgia, that's where game day will be. LSU, Florida, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, and then Georgia Tech and Clemson. You know, Georgia Tech is a team that has gotten a lot of love, maybe more so because Clemson has been underwhelming, losing week one and then being down 16-0 to Troy last week, coming back to win that one. You know, the look ahead number at DraftKings was 7.5. Now you're looking at 3.5, 3. What do you make of this spot here? Haynes King sat out last week. He's going to be fine. I think it was more of a precautionary measure against a FCS program in Gardner-Webb. So a fascinating matchup there in Atlanta with Georgia Tech hosting Clemson.
Yeah, and I agree with that trend of that line moving. I have it all the way down to Clemson by one. It's just hard to believe if you looked at this back in July or August. But, yeah, with Georgia Tech, I had them third in the ACC coming in. I think that their schedule draw was what also caught my eye. It's one of the easier ACC slates for them. But big offensive line again. You're going to get that from Brent Key. That's his calling card. What stood out with Clemson, you know, they lost a coin flip game with LSU, and that's a talented team. But in both their games, LSU and Troy last week, their inability to run the ball, and that's a glaring issue so far. They were putting a receiver, Adam Randall. They switched him over to running back since they lost Phil Maffa to the draft. So, but even besides that, this big offensive line that was highly touted coming in, all these all ACC guys, hasn't produced at all. They're down just 3 yards per carry. I know one of those games is LSU, but you'd expect to be able to enforce your will on Troy. Didn't happen. So that's a red flag right there. I don't think the passing attack has clicked as well as you'd think. Three starters were injured last week, so I don't know. We'll continue to monitor their health heading into this one. So it's a definitely winnable game for Georgia Tech, and this is could be a program-defining moment for them. They've been down ever since they went away from that flexbone triple option that Paul Johnson ran. It's been a long rebuild, and I think finally they're back on the stage. So, yeah, I can't wait to see this one. It's going to go a long way in determining an ACC title spot.
You know, it was a sleepy spot last week for LSU as they played Louisiana Tech, and they were catching, you know, laying around 37.5 was a closing number. They win 23-7. And then, as we talked about, Florida gets absolutely stunned in a just terrible performance against South Florida. So now you're looking at a little bit of an overreaction in the market, but maybe it's justified. And that's one of the big things we discussed yesterday with Chris Felica, overreaction or market correction. What do your numbers have on LSU hosting Florida, and how much adjustments have we seen with these two teams?
Yeah, right now I've got LSU favored by 7.5. I think the line is around 8.5, so close. Maybe not as caught up with Florida's performance. I mean, maybe it'll take a couple games to really downgrade Florida. On paper, I still like what they have, but then you see them play, and it's not adding up to what we thought we had with Florida. And LSU, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see the defense here with another big test. They excelled against Clemson. This is the highest paid coordinator in college football with Blake Baker. They went out, they signed the number one transfer hall in America. A lot of those plugged into their defense, a lot of them in the secondary, and so far so good. I mean, they really shut down Kay Klubnik. And again, pitched essentially a shutout last week. Louisiana Tech got a score really late in that game. I think it was backups in anyway. So essentially a shutout against Louisiana Tech. That's what you want to see. So I like LSU here at home, but 7.5 is my projection. It's 8.5. So, I mean, does that mean I have to go for Florida here? We'll see. But, you know, hopefully I don't throw any shoes like the last big time these two matched up.
Man, that's God, that feels like a million years ago. The old the shoe throwing incident. All right, two more games before we get out of here. A game that I am very nervous about: Notre Dame and Texas A&M. I've been impressed by what I've seen from the playmakers for the Aggies. The defense, it feels like, leaves a little bit to be desired. It's funny, you think back to last year. This was an absolute grinder to start the year, and I think this thing might be a little more open than people anticipate there, with Notre Dame coming off the bye week as well. I thought their defense could have played better against Miami. So a big one in South Bend and kind of a must-get spot for the Irish. What have you made of A&M through two games, and what do you make of this one on Saturday night in South Bend?
I think I agree with you that it's a must-win. It's a little bit different when you evaluate Notre Dame and their path to a playoff in this new model because, you know, now with the conferences having an automatic bid, there really aren't so much must-wins anymore in September. You still have that back, you know, that back door to the playoff if you win your conference, kind of like what Clemson did last year, losing a couple non-cons to the SEC, but then still backing in. So anyway, with Notre Dame, we don't know. There's not an exact path. I think 11-1 for sure they're in. That's a lock. 10-2, it becomes questionable,
yeah.
Especially when two of those are your supposed to be your marquee wins. You're looking at resume here. You want to beat Miami and beat A&M. Those are two definitely ranked teams. I think USC will be ranked later in the year for them. But you're running out of marquee wins. So, yeah, it's a huge spot. Now, I do think that there was some overreaction to Notre Dame. I think they played okay against Miami. Again, first time starting quarterback against a top 10 team. I thought that we saw CJ Carr improve and grow as that game went on. And I think give him a whole bye week to develop. I think he's going to come out a lot sharper here now at home against a Texas A&M team. So all that to say, I've got Notre Dame favored by 4, which if you look at the Vegas spread, I think it's around a touchdown. So maybe some value on A&M here. But I agree that their defense, A&M, has not impressed either, and you'd expect more from Mike Elko in his second season. Lastly, if you're looking at playmakers, I think both sides have him at receiver. I'm impressed with what Notre Dame added at receiver. And with same with A&M, KC Concepcion, 4 touchdowns so far. Mario Craver is dynamic there. So I like what both sides have. It's supposed to be 2 of the best offensive lines in the country. But, yeah, I'll go Notre Dame by about a field goal.
All right, we'll close on this. Georgia-Tennessee, this is very interesting because we've seen a big market movement here as this was 6.5 last week, now down to 3.5 between Tennessee and Georgia. Georgia, very pedestrian in their first 2 games of the year, which is kind of the mark of what Kirby Smart does. Marshall, and then last week against Austin Peay, I think there were some weather delays in that one as well. And Tennessee, look, they've beat up on 2 inferior teams, but they still beat up on them, right? Syracuse and East Tennessee State covering both games. So what do you make of this one? This is a fun one on Saturday afternoon. College game day will be there in Rocky Top. How much have you upgraded this Tennessee team? What have you done with Georgia? And what do you make of this spot on Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, well, this was you and Chris's dog with fleas, right? That's what we're thinking about Georgia potentially. I don't know. It's always scary to throw out Georgia. I mean, when you look at their roster, 11 5-stars on defense on the 2-deep. And of course, that's a 2-deep on defense is 22 players. So half their defense are former 5-stars. Insane. So I think you have one of the best defenses in America. The question is, what's going on with the offense? And I get that Kirby Smart likes to play conservative in the non-conference against the FCS and non-AQ teams. But there's something to be said about a first and goal with the 1-yard line that they can't punch in. That's a red flag. I mean, you got to be able to punch it in on an FCS on Austin Peay. So, you know, you don't want to just grade a team on one series, but that was a red flag. I think throughout that game, the offense was pretty stagnant. Meanwhile, with Tennessee, they're dropping 72 on their FCS team. They ran it up on Syracuse, which looks like one of the worst Power 4 teams, but nonetheless, it's a Power 4 test. So yeah, the numbers have moved towards Tennessee in this one. I've got Georgia still favored by 2 points. That's, you know, I think in the preseason that would have been around a touchdown. So it's trending in that way for Tennessee. They're at home. I think it's going to be tough. I'm still going to pick Georgia to win it, but I think there's some value there taking Tennessee.
Pick 6 Plus is out now. You can get it every week over at picksixpreviews.com/plus. And Brett Cianci is going to give us his updated numbers and look ahead to the weekend ahead every Wednesday here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Brett, always appreciate it. Enjoy the games this week, man.
Hey, thanks. Thanks to you too, Tim. Have a good one.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks to Wes Reynolds, as well as Brett Cianci at Wes Reynolds 1 at Pick 6 Previews is where you can find Brett on social media. Thanks to our sponsors again for this podcast, Rainbow Authentics. I'm rocking my Rainbow Authentics hat right now as we record this podcast, as well as Kahala. We'll be back on Thursday with Matt Eumanns as we run through our best bets and all of the biggest games of the Week 3 college football card. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe. Let's keep it rolling. Let's keep this momentum going. We've had great numbers through the first couple of weeks. Once again, I implore you, if you see a stranger on the street, maybe they're crossing the street, tell them about the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I think it's a great conversation starter as well. I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to Ryan Hunter, our producer, for putting this all together. We're back Thursday.
with the breakdown of the Week 3 card right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.